Meanwhile, at the United Nations headquarters in New York, the pressure is on to find a diplomatic and peaceful solution to the crisis.
Nous privilégions la solution pacifique.
That force does not have to be inevitable.
The issues at stake by peaceful means.
Indeed, a peaceful solution is the desire of us all.
UN Secretary General Perez de Cuellar himself flies to Baghdad and meets with Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. He fails, though, to convince him that the international threat will be real if he chooses to remain in Kuwait. His failure, however, doesn't meet only despair and frustration upon his return to New York.
Dennis Halliday, former director of the UN Iraq program.
Saddam Hussein had indicated a willingness to compromise, mediate, and withdraw his troops. Also, the Arab states were given a chance to negotiate, but they were given 48 hours, I believe, by President Bush. So in summary, I think the Americans did not want a diplomatic solution at that late stage. And I'm talking, you know, after the invasion.
At the time of the U.S. effort to get council approval to go to war, Yemen voted against the use of force resolution. And no sooner had the ambassador from Yemen put down his hand after the vote than there was a U.S. representative at his side saying, "That will be the most expensive no vote you ever cast." And sure enough, 3 days later, the U.S. cut its entire aid budget to Yemen, the poorest country in the Arab world.
On November 29, 1990, driven by the U.S. delegation, the U.N. Secretary Council passes the war resolution with a deadline set for January the 15th. There would be no turning back at this point.
International affairs analyst Phyllis Bennis, Institute for Policy Studies.
It was the U.S. itself that made the decision that the Gulf crisis, the crisis caused by Iraq's illegal invasion of Kuwait, would not be solved by diplomatic means, but only by military means. The U.S. wanted that war.
Iraq and its leaders must be held liable for these crimes of abuse and destruction.
January the 17th, 1991. 3 a.m. Iraq time. Hell breaks loose on Baghdad. The formidable firepower of the coalition, amassed primarily by the United States over the past 5 months, reveals its awesome might. Televisions worldwide start showing images of a supposedly foolproof, high-precision campaign of so-called surgical bombings said to hit nothing but Iraqi military targets.
Paul Sullivan, president of the National Gulf War Resource Center.
In the Gulf War, the military decided to keep the press out. So the press was kept out. And you didn't know what was going on.
Typically, the U.S. military claimed that its bombing of Iraq was pinpoint accurate. Nothing could be further from the truth. 110,000 aerial sorties, 88,500 tons of bombs, the equivalent of 7.5 Hiroshimas in 42 days. And you could see the indiscriminate nature of the bombing.
Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark.
Probably killed 150,000, maybe 200,000 people. There's no question from the evidence of the bombing. The United States deliberately planned the destruction of the economic support systems for the Iraqi population. Just take water. They knocked out reservoir dams, pumping stations for water pipelines, filtration plants to purify the water so you could drink it without getting sick. On food, they systematically attacked the food chain. From one end of the country to the other. They knocked out all electric power within hours. They knocked out communications, repeatedly attacked generator stations and telephone exchange facilities. They knocked out transportation. They showed that you can destroy a country and deprive it of essential life support systems without ever setting foot on it through cruise missiles and aerial bombardment.
February the 23rd, 1991. The coalition ground forces start rolling in Kuwait. The Allied offensive gets fast and deep into Kuwait without encountering significant resistance. The Iraqi military Leviathan is nowhere in sight. And the troops still present in Kuwait are simply no match for the modern coalition forces.
U.S. Marine Morocco Amari.
When we got to Kuwait, we were expecting, you know, these 5 million man army, this big monster. And when we got there, they were like chihuahuas. The mosquitoes and flies put up a bigger fight than they did.
General Norman Schwarzkopf.
We knew that our capability was much better than that.
These people were like regular Joes that, you know, hey, somebody comes to your house and say, either fight the Americans or I'll kill your family. You know, of course you're gonna say, give me the gun. You know, they had no other choice. These guys didn't even know how to shoot the weapons. They were in regular clothes, and you know, you pick up AK-47s, it's filled with sand. It's just like, what is this?
By the end of February 1991, when the dust from the coalition ground offensive starts to settle, the big surprise is not finding the large Iraqi force previously reported by Washington.
Investigative reporter Gene Heller.
In mid-September, the Bush administration was saying that there were 250,000 Iraqi troops and 1,500 tanks amassing at the Saudi border for a possible invasion. I'm not saying there were none there. The people fleeing Kuwait passed Iraqi soldiers. They passed quite a few Iraqi soldiers, so there were some there, just probably not a force of a size that would invade Saudi Arabia.
You have to remember that a very large portion of Saddam's army never came into Kuwait. Okay, he kept a large part of his army back along the borders with Iran and along the and within the capital, his Republican Guard specifically.
On February the 28th, 1991, the other big surprise is the announcement of a ceasefire when the Allied forces were already pushing deep into Iraq.
We took Kuwait, all of Kuwait, in 24 hours, the Marines. The Army went through southern Iraq and took that. And that was within a 24-hour period. And we stopped. You know, everybody was like, well, why didn't we get Saddam? You felt like you went over there and you did your job, but you didn't get to finish your job. It was just like, why stop?
Ramsey Clark.
The United States military could have moved straight to Baghdad in less than 24 hours. There was a political decision not to do it.
On February 26, 1991, 2 days prior to Washington declaring ceasefire, a new element had appeared in the Iraqi equation. Tired of 12 years of ruthless dictatorship, a great portion of the Iraqi population had started an uprising against the regime in Baghdad. The news was withheld from the media as the Bush administration didn't want to make it look like they would stop the war to spare Saddam Hussein's regime.
Michelle Hajj, journalist, writer, Jordan.
People began to demonstrate in the streets, carrying arms and destroying things. Bush at that moment began to think, we have to stop the war. And that's how he surprised General Colin Powell on the 27th of February by telling him, let us stop the war now. And when he asked him, what do you mean by now? He said, now, at this moment. And he did that in spite of the objections of Schwarzkopf.
If we had been allowed to go on for one or two more days, that we would have totally destroyed the Iraqi forces and it would have been a battle of annihilation. I said, when they first called me from Washington and asked me what my plans were, I said, we plan to continue the operation.
By early March 1991, the rebellion is starting to spread all across Iraq. The Bush administration's response is a surprising support of Saddam's regime.
Michelle Hajj.
And what happened, of course, in Safwan, the way that General Schwarzkopf gave a lot to the Iraqis on the 3rd of March, when they met at Safwan at the border with Kuwait, when he allowed them to use helicopters, even armed helicopters, I came to the conclusion that there was some kind of deal.
General Norman Schwarzkopf.
So I said, yes, you can fly your helicopters. Now, subsequently, helicopters were used to suppress the rebels up north.
The Americans would cease fire, which was a very unexpected early ceasefire, in order to give the chance to the Iraqis, to allow the Iraqis to be able to eliminate the rebellion in the south. For the next 2 years, there was no real attempt to topple the Iraqi regime in Baghdad. And there was no American attack, although there was so many reasons. And President Bush threatened so many times to go back to war because Iraq is not supervising their promises in 687 UN resolution. But real fighting did not happen. Real war did not happen.
A decade later, the victory is much less clear-cut. The Iraqi forces are long gone from Kuwait, but the United Nations sanctioned embargo is still in place over Iraq. The toll on its ordinary citizens is staggering.
Phyllis Bennis, Institute for Policy Studies.
There has never been an international sanctions regime even close to as rigorous and as tightly imposed as the sanctions that have been imposed on Iraq.
Dr. Labib Kamawi, Human Rights Association President, Jordan.
Saddam Hussein is one thing, and what's happening to the Iraqi people is a different thing. The Iraqi people are starving. People are dying.
Nasira Sadoum, director of the Gulf War Foundation, Baghdad.
Every one of us has lost children or members of their families. Not one Iraqi can say that he has lost no one. Every one of us lost our beloved.